Discussions between advocates of public school equity and public school reform can often quickly flare into incendiary debates, with each side advancing data that prove a favored position or disprove an opponent's. WHYY education reporter Kevin McCrory sat down with one reform advocate whose recent report championing the charter sector has some crying foul.
Mark Gleason, executive director of the Philadelphia School Partnership. Welcome to Newsworks Tonight.
Hi, it's good to be here.
In a recent report, you say that for poor kids in Philadelphia, there are currently two school systems, one that works and one that doesn't. You find that district schools and charter schools are in both of those categories, but you conclude that the charter sector gets better outcomes for poor and minority kids. How did this report come about? What were you hoping to accomplish? And what insights do you see in the results?
The narrative in Philadelphia around the budget crisis that's surrounding the school district has become, in our view, too much about district schools versus charter schools, as if they're these competing camps. And what we tried to show in this report is that there are good schools in both camps, and the issue is really not about those two types of schools, but is really about, are we doing everything we can to ensure that we have enough schools that are working, and are we doubling down by investing our resources, our people, and our money in those schools so they can serve more kids?
So the logic of the report is hinged on the idea that the schools in both of these two systems, you say it's the high impact and it's the underachieving system, right? The logic there is that they're serving similar student populations, right? But you have received some criticism for your methodology in this vein. Research for Action released a brief that takes your report to task for several factors, most pressingly the idea that other student demographic data shows that the two systems aren't actually that similar at all. In essence, the underperforming schools serve more Latino students, more low-income students, more English language learners, more boys, and a resounding amount more special education students. Why not account for these other factors in the report?
Well, first of all, I would say I don't necessarily know if all of your data points are coming from the same sources that ours came from.
School performance profile, the public data on the state website.
But I would argue that some of those differences aren't statistically significant. In individual schools on either list, we can find higher ELL, we can find higher special ed. There are many charters here with high special ed populations that do a better job than peer school district schools. There's a lot of data about education and about each of these schools, so I don't think we need to get bogged down in that, whether it's 93% or 88%. How significant of a difference is that? At the end of the day, we're spending a lot of money in schools that, despite good intentions, are not working. And so what I would say to Research for Action is, what's your plan to do better by these students? Because the evidence is plowing more money into those schools that are not getting the job done is not going to be effective.
I think they would say that if the point of your report was to make an apples-to-apples comparison to say, here's a system that works, here's one that doesn't. In fact, when they pull apart the numbers themselves, they say, well, this isn't an apples-to-apples comparison because you're not taking into account all these other factors, I guess specifically the special ed number. That's the biggest difference, right? And it's there that, this is where the difficult job of educating students really shows up. It's not just if they're poor necessarily, but it's all these other factors. So shouldn't they be taken into account? I think they would argue.
Well, if a school's 23% special ed and its proficiency on the state tests is in the 23% range, then that leaves, by my math, about 50% of the students who aren't special ed and who aren't learning nearly to the degree they need to be. So something's still very wrong in those schools.
Okay. Well, the high impact list you cite also includes two selective admission schools, and it does skew towards elementary schools. So we see more elementary schools in the high performing list. We see more high schools on the low performing list. Also, Research for Action points out that half the schools on the underperforming list took in displaced students last year from schools that had been closed. So it did seem odd to me when I was reading this objectively that these things wouldn't be taken into account, especially given the fact that you're saying that the schools on the underperforming list should be closed or be put under new management. It seems like if we're going to make that sort of, drastic decision that definitely impacts families and students in Philadelphia, all these factors should be considered.
I don't disagree with that. As you're familiar with in your business, sometimes you have to leave some of the words off the page to make a point or create a document that is actually readable. We certainly tried to look at all of that, but at the end of the day, we're not a research institution. We're about how do we make the next step toward giving every student in Philadelphia access to a good education. And we can quibble about whether those 22 schools are the right schools to be on that list. But what I don't think we can quibble about is that Philadelphia is failing right now in the effort to educate every child. We have far too many students and far too many schools who aren't on the path to college readiness.
Well, Mark Leeson, Executive Director of the Philadelphia School Partnership, thanks so much for joining us on NewsWorks tonight.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.